you know that the families that attend live Homeschool Made Simple seminars tend to be the folks that stay the course with our methods for the years to come? There's something wonderful about the excitement that's generated by being in a room full of like-minded families, hearing success stories, fathers meeting other fathers, and teens connecting with new friends. It is said that repetition is the mother of learning. If you want to hold fast to these time-proven methods, it's essential to hear this information regularly as your children's needs and ages change. Join us in Franklin, Tennessee on Saturday, August 1st, or in Dallas, Texas on Saturday, August 29th. We have lots of new and exciting information, speakers, and breakout sessions. Register at homeschoolmadesimple.net/seminars. I can't wait to see you there.
You're listening to the Homeschool Made Simple podcast. This is a podcast to help you homeschool simply, inexpensively, and enjoyably. Carol Joy Side has been helping families homeschool for several decades now through her literature-based approach to education. And I'm Rachel Winchester, a fellow homeschool mom using this method with my own three children. In this episode, Carol and I take a deep dive into the topic of handwriting. It is one of the parts of education that is greatly affected by the better late than early philosophy, and one commonly misunderstood among homeschool families. Are you looking for a science podcast your kids will love that is rooted in biblical truth? Nat Theo, Nature Lessons Rooted in the Bible, helps kids grow in wonder and faith as they explore God's world through the lens of God's Word. It's a simple and fascinating way to enjoy Bible-based nature study. Weekly episodes explore animals your kids already love, like axolotls, sea otters, bats, lions, giraffes, and more. Join thousands of families tuning in every day around the world to this top-ranked podcast. It's engaging, biblically grounded, and full of, wait, tell me more, moments that spark great family conversations. I know my family has greatly enjoyed this podcast. The Nat Theo podcast is free to listen to wherever you enjoy podcasts. You can also join their club for new Bible and nature curriculum every week. Listen free wherever you enjoy podcasts or at nattheo.com. Now let's get into the episode. As we talked about some different topics we could share about with you guys, we wanted to hit on the topic of handwriting because this is something that easily gets lost in the shuffle or misunderstood or just kind of overcompensated for in the homeschool world. So let's talk about handwriting and maybe what you mean by that, Carol. Could you start out with that?
Yeah. Well, so first of all, Rachel, when we were using a Piagetian developmental delayed approach, we also want to delay handwriting. And that very often is something that the curriculum people are selling you, you know, for kindergarten and first grade. And that is kind of over my dead body, I like to say, because for many reasons. So let's talk about, first of all, why we delay formal handwriting. So handwriting requires eye-hand coordination and small motor control, both of which in some children can be quite delayed. And that has nothing to do with intelligence. It has to do with maturation or development. So particularly in boys, this is a very big issue that leads to a lot of shame and frustration and anger. And it doesn't have to. It's that we're forcing something on a child before they are developmentally ready for it. So readiness is the key in everything that we teach, but the curriculum sellers do not explain that, or they're just giving you that one size fits all thing. This is what first graders do. Not so at all.
Yeah.
And so we want our children's first experience with formal academics to be successful. We want them to have success experiences every day. And so when you're forcing a child that doesn't have the eye-hand coordination or the small motor control to do something well, what we're doing is we're poisoning that child to that skill or that developmental accomplishment. So if you have a little boy, the research on this is actually quite fascinating, Rachel. The nerve endings in little boys' fingertips do not develop at the same time as little girls' nerve endings in their fingertips. And so because of that, girls are much more able to push out perfect cursive long before the boys of their same age group. And so this is why so many men tell me that they were hit with a ruler by their teachers and that they were shamed and embarrassed because they couldn't write. And it just makes me sob, really, in my heart, because of course they can't write. They're little boys and they should be outside squashing bugs and catching frogs and throwing rocks and shooting bows and arrows at their sisters. But instead, they're sitting at a table with these little lines that they're supposed to stay within and push out these perfect handwriting. And it's unrealistic. It's unfair. You're asking a child to do something that they can't do. And of course, speaking from personal experience, JJ wrote exactly like a caveman. He had.
I can testify that he does not write like a caveman now.
Today, that's right. But boy, howdy, did he when he was little. And I would take it to seminars and show people because they thought I was exaggerating. I would walk up and down the aisle and show it to them, and they would just laugh. It was so bad. And then every year at Christmas time, I would pray for Christmas to never come because after Christmas comes thank you notes. And we were homeschooling. And so you can just imagine the pressure was on to, you know, to get these perfect little thank you notes out the door with no misspelling or improper capitalization or, you know, letter form, the whole thing. Content had to be perfect. And we would have these knock down, drag out fights every year. So finally, the first thing that the Lord laid on my heart to do, and this may have been from Dr. Moore, nothing is original with me. I bet it was from him. I would say, JJ, you can dictate to me, to Aunt Matilda. Okay. Dear Aunt Matilda, I love that red sweater that you knit for me. It fits me perfectly, and I wore it to go skiing up at Mammoth. I can't wait to see you this summer. Love, Joey. All right. So he dictates. You've written it perfectly. Letter form, punctuation, spelling, capitalization. Everything's perfect. Then you hand it to little Joey. Now all Joey has to do is copy. He doesn't have to figure out what to say. Who's Aunt Matilda? What did she give me? I don't know what to say to her mom. All that stuff. How do I spell it? How do I, you know, all that has been done. All your child does now is reproduce it. Because Charlotte Mason said, don't ever let your child see anything that is incorrect. Only let them see things that are correct. Never write, you know, like if a child is up on a blackboard, she would say, don't let them misspell a word. Quickly cover it with your hand, she'd say. Don't let the rest of those children see that misspelling because you're imprinting on the child's brain. So this way your child is getting a big bang out of writing this thank you note because it's perfect. And then you're sending it off. And of course, Aunt Matilda doesn't know the steps that went into it. All they know is they got this lovely thank you note, right?
Yes.
Which is very, very nice. And then, you know, I can remember getting phone calls thanking us for the thank you notes when JJ changed to this other form of handwriting. The relatives literally called us and said, did JJ really write those? Because they knew what he had written before. And they're like, did the Martian swap him? Because this is not the handwriting we're used to.
Oh, my goodness.
And let me tell you my little secret that all of you can find and have. And it's the simplest thing in the world. So I was speaking in Nashville at a state convention. And there was a gentleman there named Chris Davis. And he ran back then a homeschool supply ministry called the Elijah Company. And he was just precious. And so I, in the course of being there all weekend with everybody, all the different folks, I said, oh, my son's handwriting, I just can't describe it to you. And he's like, okay, I've got the solution. And he goes to his table and he gets me this book, Book E as in Edward, written by these two women, Getty and Dubay, D-U-B-A-Y. And he hands it to me and he says, as JJ had just, I think, turned 12 and still wrote like this. He was in like sixth grade, whatever, however old you are. And so he gives me the book as a gift. I take it home and I say to JJ, look, I don't care what type, if you want to write in, you know, Swahili, I don't care what form of handwriting you want to write in, but you have to write in something. And so why don't you try this book? So I gave it to him. Of course, he's an artist, and he started using this book, and it was like he'd been hit with like a, you know, fairy godmother's wand or something. And he was completely transformed. And within a couple months that, so I don't know, I was probably in Nashville maybe in September. And by Christmas is when he was getting long distance phone calls, when you had to pay money for long distance phone calls. And they just couldn't believe it. And then I went to Florida to visit my mom and dad, and my great aunt lived there. And my great aunt had gone up and down at the country club or the beach club, showing everybody, darling, you simply must see this perfectly divine thank you note I received from my great nephew. Isn't it just fabulous? You know, and she told me what she did. And I'm like, I could just picture those poor women going, But anyway, it made a big splash. And people day will say to me, how does JJ know how to write like that? I'm like, it's just Getty Dubé. It's the simplest thing in the world. They think I did some, you know, wonderful feat and accomplishment.
Right.
Because people will sit next to him at church and they'll see him taking notes if he's not preaching. And they're just like, oh, I want to. One young man came up to me and said, I want to write like JJ. And I'm like, oh, Eric, it's so easy. You have no idea. But, you know, it looks so impressive. So let's talk a little bit about the theory behind this type of handwriting. Okay. Uh-huh. So first of all, it's italic handwriting, which is as old as time. And in some of the finest prep schools, for example, like where Jackie Kennedy, when she was a young woman, she went to a school in New York City called the Madams of the Sacred Heart. They have schools around the country, and they had one in Buffalo as well. Very, very exclusive prep schools for girls. Mm-hmm. And so I played field hockey, varsity field hockey in high school. And when a new girl came from the Madams school that we had in Buffalo, she came and was on the hockey team with me, and she would carry around a fountain pen with her, and she would write in the most exquisite, like it looked like calligraphy to me. And being an art major, I was like, oh my word, how do you know how to write like that? And she said, well, that's just the way we were taught to write at school. You know, so she'd gone to this school. And so that made an imprint on my mind. Then years later, you know, I discovered Getty Dubé, and it's the handwriting that this girl, when she came to our school, brought with her. And so you start in italic handwriting, you learn one alphabet for life. So in America today, we learn an alphabet to read, which is printer's alphabet. Then we learn how to print, which is a completely different alphabet. Then we learn cursive, which is a third alphabet, and we wonder why nobody knows how to read or write in America. So the italic method is very, very streamlined. There's no wasted motion in learning. You learn your alphabet, your italic, and the books are very artistic and creative. And then at about third grade, you begin to learn how to join those same letters. You're not learning new letters. You're just learning how to join them with a little connecting dash kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And then eventually in book E, you're fully writing. Like you start out with printing, same alphabet, and then very, very quickly. So if you have older kids, book D is in David or E is in Edward, will get the job done where they can make that transition out of what other form of writing that they have been using. And then when they get really old, so the Getty Dubé system goes to book, I think it's G or H, if I'm not mistaken. And then after that, then they can move into calligraphy. And they already have their form in place, and they just move it to a little bit higher level. So they wrote a book called Write Now, WriteNow, which is for high school and adults. So you can be doing this with your children at the same time, or you can get book E for everybody in the family, and you can all, and JJ just did one book. And then I think he did Now, he has studied calligraphy where he taught himself with calligraphy books. And you can certainly do that. And you can use a nib and everything, you know, a calligraphy nib. But for this, you don't need. I know that my girlfriend had used a fountain pen, but you do not need a fountain pen for
fancy gear.
That's right.
The next school year is coming quickly. If you are looking to simplify your to-do list and maximize your child's impact, check out Voteberg Music Academy for a holistic approach to music. For less than the price of one private lesson, your whole family can learn either guitar, piano, violin, mandolin, or ukulele from professional musicians that have been performing for decades. Instead of learning in isolation, your musician will be inspired to be a part of a community of other like-minded families performing on a student showcase, participating in quarterly challenges and competing in contests for cash prizes. Instead of trying to pick out songs for themselves on YouTube, the Voteberg method offers a proven success path that thousands of students have used to earn badges mailed to their doorstep while gaining confidence and proficiency as a musician. Live coaching calls with your instructor will tailor lessons to each of your students' specific needs and goals. If you're looking to bring fun, rewarding music into your home this school year, go to VoteburgMusicAcademy.com. Use our code HOMESCHOOL25 for 25% off your first month. Simplify your curriculum search with music lessons designed for families. Voteburg Music Academy will hold your hand each step of the way. Now let's get back to the show.
So I have a question about, so what age would you then say if we are waiting for development though, but then they have these ABC books, you know, and I guess what would be some of those signs if your child isn't really ready? Can they actually be in pain when they do these?
Yes, they can. So that's a great question. So let me tell you how Dr. Moore taught us to start our children in beginning writing, like writing readiness. Okay. So he said the first thing that we do is that we should take a paintbrush and like a big house paintbrush, you know, a big wide paintbrush. And we should go outside with our child and put, give them like a bucket of water and let them dip the paintbrush in water and then. They go up to like a garage door and they should do circles as large as they are, straight lines, slanted lines, curved lines. So they're getting all this large motor experience with the building blocks of writing. And they're doing it very successfully. Then you can tell them to get on the ground and make the letter with their body. Or you can make bread dough letters with them, so they're three-dimensional. Or Montessori, Maria Montessori said, cut out sandpaper and let them stroke the sandpaper so that they're tying in the sensory stimulation of what that letter, we go down, then we go around, then we go out, like that's an R, you know. And so incorporating the full body and then taking a lasagna pan and putting flour in the lasagna pan or some sort of even like chalk dust and letting them draw in the sand or whatever it is, the letters, again, quite large, not little bitty. And then eventually what I did is I bought a slate and the slate had, you know, the top and bottom line that are solid with the middle line that are dot, dot, dot. Which, you know, used to be in schools. I don't know if they still use those on chalkboards, but you can buy one where it's printed on it. And then let your child draw with chalk letters that are larger than they will be drawing like in a curriculum product of any kind. And then even with the first Getty Dubé book, if you feel like the lines are too small for the book A, because the first book is book A is an apple, book B would be like second grade. If you feel like those lines are too small, particularly if you have a little boy, then go ahead and let them write on a slate with a chalk or you know, buy paper with larger lines, which they sell at supply stores for homeschool kids. And then when they finally are ready to work in the book, keep it short and sweet. You want them to be begging for more. So with your little boys, maximum two lines a day. They don't have to do a full page. Keep it very, very short. Your girls will want to do the whole thing in 2 days, but your boys, especially your firstborn girls, but your boys will not. And it's a dirty little secret that most boys hate handwriting till about the age of 12. So keep it very minimal for your boys. Your girls will beg, excuse me, will beg for more. So, and I don't think that there's any need to do formal writing in first grade. You know, so say you're using Dr. Moore's method or the method in the Scandinavian countries where 7 is first grade, which I hope you will. That might be a time to just be doing those large motor exercises, getting them used to the idea of writing. Now, some children are begging to write their name. Teach them to write their name, but use the Getty Dubé alphabet so that they don't have to unlearn the way that you. So don't teach them stick and ball if you're going to eventually teach them Getty Dubé. Teach it to them from beginning. When they say, how do I write mama? So you can put the letter strips on a wall. You can buy letter strips from Getty Dubé. You can also take those letter strips maybe to Kinko's or something and have them blown up and then have them around the circumference of the ceiling of your playroom or wherever you might be when their kids are working on writing or your dining room. And that way they can keep eyeballing the alphabet without trying. And then this is the other thing, Rachel. A lot of families, what I'm finding is, A, they're not using the recommended curriculum. So they're using something completely different. And I kind of want to say, why is that? Like, this is really important. This is really something that you're going to thank me for. This is a lifelong skill that you're giving your children, and you're giving them success, and they don't have to keep changing horses midstream. Yeah. When families have already been using something and then they do change the horse, you know, on my recommendation, I say to them, now keep this alphabet next to your on the table, maybe taped to the table or along the ceiling enlarged, because everything else they do that requires writing, I want them to always use Getty Dubé. A lot of families say to me, well, we do Getty Dubé in the book, but then when they write in their journal, they're not using, you know, they're doing something else. So that's why in a perfect world, I want everyone to only have used this. Mm-hmm. But if your children are older, like JJ obviously was much older, but it, you know, it just took a month or two to, he hated handwriting anyway. So this was not like he was doing lots of handwriting for pleasure anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, he wasn't begging you.
Right.
And then I just wanted to clarify. So this is just handwriting by itself. We're not like handwriting and then also doing other grammar activities or break apart a sentence and then write 2 words or something like that.
Thank you for asking that question. The word language arts makes me break out in a rash because language arts, the true art of language is reading great books and great authors. And if you want your children to be grammatically accurate, they do not learn that from a textbook or a workbook or a class. They learn it from reading Charles Dickens and Jane Austen and Henry James and Solzhenitsyn. They learn by reading great books like the Little House books and the Narnia books and all the way through. So you can fill in workbook pages, or you can spend that time reading out loud to your children by the hour while they're begging you not to stop. So Ruth Beechick, who is one of the pioneers in the homeschool movement, one of the experts, let's see, what it's on our handouts, but I can't think, is it How to Teach Your Child Successfully? Is that what it's called? 4 through 8, something like that? Yeah. So Ruth Beechick, she said, if you give a child a standardized test, like a Stanford test, for example, and in that test, they will say to the child, now, Dr. Moore said, don't ever give standardized testing to children if you can help it. Now, in Minnesota, that you can't help it. You have to. But if you can help it, wait till at least fourth grade to give children standardized tests, he said to us, because your child is like a half-baked loaf of bread, and you don't take it out of the oven halfway. Let it bake before you evaluate a child or put a label, God forbid, or test them in some, you know, shaming way. And so she said, when you give a child a standardized test, as I said, like the Stanford, And they say they will give you a sentence written three different ways or three different sentences, whatever. And then they'll say, which sentence is correct? And Ruth Beechick said, a reader, a child who's a reader, who's been read to, will know which sentence is correct. And a child who's not been read to will not. And I don't care how many language arts, so-called, hours they've spent. Please do not do that. We teach grammar. Grammar is the most abstract of all subjects, and we teach it in eighth grade to mastery. We teach it knowing that your child is going to be brilliant at it and they're going to love it. And we use a manipulative program called, what is it called? Winston. I just did a blank.
I don't know.
I'm sorry. I was thinking, I was going to say English from the roots up, but no, it's Winston grammar. And I just recommend that you get the basic and you use it in eighth grade. And then before your kids take like college boards or, you know, high level testing, if you want to do Winston grammar advanced level, you can do that maybe when they're a junior. But we wait till our children are fully abstract because grammar is the most abstract subject with math and also voted the most unpopular subject in remedial prep schools. When they've interviewed kids like at the Winston School in Dallas, which used to be just for boys, now they let girls in as well. But for kids with learning disabilities, they interviewed them, what are your most hated subjects? And every single kid in the school said the same thing, grammar and math, because they're so abstract. And we introduce mm-hmm. them to children when their children are concrete. And yep. we wonder why they hate those subjects. But it's because of the timing of it. Readiness is key. And that's yep. when we know when a child's ready to read. Why? Because they're trying to decode. They're trying to read signs as you're driving down the street. You know, all these things. Mm-hmm. So as a parent, you are very attuned to readiness. But the experts, so-called, have told you that you don't know what's best and that your child is ready, you know, when they're in the playpen. And so you begin to doubt your own perceptions of readiness. But readiness is a very common sense thing. And as Piaget said, of course, later is better than early. And the earlier that you teach a child to read and write and do arithmetic, the higher incidence of reading failure your child will have. That's just statistics. So there's no benefit in early education for children. And there's a whole lot of concern about the damage that it does to them and how they see themselves as a student.
Mm-hmm. I think Ruth Beechick's books have been really helpful for me to read. Mm-hmm. And then you feel you have that confidence in, okay, this isn't just, you know, airy-fairy kind of stuff. This is really, research. And there's a plan, you know, because I think maybe sometimes people hear like, oh, don't do that and don't worry about that in third grade or don't worry about that in kindergarten or whatever. But then they feel panicky because they don't know when you're going to worry about it. When, you know, when's, what's the plan? But
that's
it's
right.
Like, if you know the plan and you know there's a good reason for it, then you feel better. You're not worrying about. Mm-hmm. Okay, I don't have to worry about grammar right now.
And that's right.
It's better that I don't worry about it right now.
Absolutely. And the irony is when you take your children out in public and people stop them, which happened to us all the time, and now it's happening with the grandchildren all the time. I'm sure you're experiencing this. And people say, where do you go to school? Why? Because your children are so articulate. How do they learn to be articulate? From workbooks? Or from being read to and being spoken to by articulate adults in their mm-hmm. home. So yeah. these are the things that children are judged on. Nobody walks around, you know, like I can remember we were checking out at Marshall's and in California when JJ was a little boy. And back then we really thought we were going to go to prison for homeschooling. So it was a tricky situation. Dr. Moore would say, don't take them out during the daytime and all this, you know, that's not the case anymore, but it could change. But anyway, and so I was checking out and JJ's talking to the sweet girl that's, you know, ringing up our purchases. And unbeknownst to me, there's a woman at the next checkout counter and she's listening to him talk. And he was probably 7, maybe. So she maybe younger than that. This woman, so I get my package and we're starting to head to the door. And this woman literally runs and like grabs me and says, excuse me, I'm a school principal up the road. And how old is he? And whatever I told her. And she said, I have never heard a child speak like that. And I'm like, and then the question, of course, comes. And I'm like, yeah, sweating bullets now. Where does he go to school? And I'm like, oh, no. Because, you know, I'm like, I'm so nervous about being thrown in jail. And I'm like, we homeschool. And then I just like literally buzzed out this door, grabbing JJ in his little yellow, exactly, in his yellow slicker. I remember what he was wearing. And we ran out the door. And I mean, but you see, that happened all day. We would be in restaurants. I remember this at Good Earth Restaurant. This girl was taking our order, and all of a sudden, she just stopped. She put the pencil on the pad, and she goes, how old is he? Like that. It's because reading makes you smart.
Uh-huh.
And it teaches you how to speak and how to use correct grammar. And a child who's been read to, as Ruth Beechick says, I just love it, instinctively knows that.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Love it. Mm-hmm. Well, hopefully we've lifted a burden today.
I will close with one thing. When people say, well, when should we start writing? I would say, when your children are moving into being more confident in reading, I know that there's different schools of thought, but I'm just going to tell you my school of thought. My personal opinion, particularly with boys, is that they don't need to write when they're learning to read. I know people don't agree with me, and they're free to do that. But that is my opinion. I think you're, particularly with a boy, writing is so difficult that don't cloud the water of reading with writing at the same time, because they're going to associate the negativity of writing for them with the joy that they could be having of just learning to read.
Yes. Yeah. And actually, when my kids and I were learning colonial history, I just got this random like nonfiction book that had different facts about things. And it had something about colonial education. It said the three R's: reading, writing, arithmetic. And it said that it was approached more as that progression.
Oh.
And so it was like the child learned to, and I was just like, that makes sense. You learn to read,
then
you're able, like, now you know the words. Now you're able to take the words, build something with them. And then now, after you know how to read and write, you can then do math which involves both of those things.
It does. It involves reading and writing. Rachel, that's brilliant.
Yeah.
Wow. Thank you for sharing that. I've never heard that, but I would say that's exactly what I have practiced. And it makes perfect sense, because math is the most abstract. Why do they have to learn math at the same time they're learning to read?
Mm-hmm. Right. And I think that's what ends up causing a lot of frustration and tension with, you know, parents and the child, because then they're like, it becomes a reading lesson and a math lesson.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's like, too much of the brain is trying to fire to do too many things, you know, at one time.
Yes. That is really brilliant. I think we're going to always try and tell that in every seminar going forward, because that has really clarified something that I think we do instinctively. But it's great to have an understanding philosophically of why these subjects don't fall at the same moment developmentally. Wow. Mm-hmm. You're a genius.
Well, the colonists.
Well, they were. Yeah, it was, as John Adams said, you would be more apt to meet an illiterate man in colonial America than to be like struck by a meteorite. He said, every man is a reader. That's what he said. And his son, John Quincy, was one of the great readers of all time.
Yeah.
So I really love this. As my mother used to say, you learn something new every day.
Yes.
Yeah. So thank you for this.
We have, and our listeners have, learned a little something today.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Homeschool Made Simple podcast. If you like what you heard in this episode, please leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, or share this episode with a friend. It means so much when you help us spread the message of Homeschool Made Simple with others. Thanks for joining us this week on the Homeschool Made Simple podcast. Remember, Jesus' commandments are not burdensome. What he calls you to do, he will enable you to do. Blessings.